You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Tabletop Podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. Brought to you in partnership with The Dice Dungeon, your UK-based provider of all things tabletop RPGs. Whether it's to fuel your Dice Goblin addiction with premium sets of dice made from glass, metal, resin. Maybe it's to grab the latest adventure or expansion in beautiful covers for your wonderful tabletop experiences. Or maybe it's things like dice rolling scrolls and trays and vaults of storage. You can check out their growing collection right now and get 10% off your entire order when you use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. Describe offers thousands upon thousands of scenes written by professional creative writers to paint the picture of your world, whether it's monsters, spells, dialogue, or maybe as a player you're trying to really paint a picture of you slicing that goblin's head off. If you want to dive in to Describe's Sonic Library, you'll find music, ambience, and so much more, as well as loads of maps to use on your virtual tabletops. You can search through their scenes. Right now, there's a bunch available for free, or you can subscribe to Describe and get 10% off for each month of your subscription for the first 2 years that it's active using the code COMMON at checkout. This week, I am joined by James to talk about true names. What are they, and how on earth do you use them in your games? Welcome to We Speak Common. And welcome to the one and only Mr. James Williams.
Hello.
It has been, it's been a damn hot second since we've done this because, sorry, I'm just knocking over a Coke can while I talk to you, how professional. You can tell it's been a while. Not only are we fortnightly now and we you know, we have this show and we have Tavern Talk, but also 2 weeks ago, Dave and I were so incredibly unwell. We had planned to do a really big Tavern Talk episode, and we planned a day to record, and then Dave was sick, and then we were going to record the next day, and then I was sick. And when I say unwell, like, there's been this horrible 48-hour bug that's been going around. Got it. It knocked us both for sick. So we missed an episode. We had a week off. But good to be back. Good to be here.
Yeah.
I don't really remember how to do this, as evidenced in all of the stuff that's just happened prior to the intro. I'm trying to set up the microphone and
don't we usually just like ramble for about an hour?
Yeah,
usually
like that.
We get off topic, mm-hmm. and then go, oh, shit, better get back on topic. We get back mm-hmm. on topic, then we go off again, and it all works out in the end.
I think somewhere in there we try and give advice or make people laugh. I think there's something like that, something in there. But let's start off topic, because that's always the way. How are things? What is your D&D/life update?
Things are pretty good. D&D update. I am really enjoying running you guys through. I can't remember its name now.
Dead in Thay.
Dead in Thay. There we go.
Yeah.
From Tales of the Yawning Portal. I was happy to introduce you all to Drevin, the polymorphed halfling who is also a pig.
We don't need to talk about Drevin. Me and Drevin. I've got some beef.
I don't know why, because Drevin has not been mean to you.
No, he's... I don't know why either. I think to be honest, in your campaign, Orlo's gone now, so I'm playing a new character called Marcus, and he has joined the party in a very strange point in their career. They are absolutely diabolically evil as well. I just want to, like, let's settle this once and for all. They killed 14 men in their sleep.
They were red wizards in the middle of the dungeon, like, you know.
James, every villain sees the good actions behind their monstrosities. So I think what you're doing there is just proving my point. Like, oh, they had to die. They were subjectively bad.
Don't want that alert level rising too much higher.
And I'm sure we had to drop atomic bombs on Japan to stop the war. Hey, it worked.
We won't get into that because we could do a whole podcast on that one right now, Ben.
Anyway, they say a necessary evil. Marcus says that was quite brutal. what is going on here? Like, what is this group? And then we enter a room that has a sea of pigs in it. And that's, I'm not even joking. Like, I, how ridiculous that sounds. A sea of pigs that were trampling us.
Yeah, so like, for those of you...
I thought we were playing a very grounded campaign.
That haven't, you know, that haven't ran the adventure or played in it. It's the swine pen.
Yeah.
You know, it's in there as written. This is a room where the ground floor is just packed full of pigs. I, of course, changed a few rules ever so slightly to make it a little bit more annoying, a little bit more lethal and deadly and unique, yeah.
Yeah. As you should, as DM, you should put your own spin on things.
So many pigs.
Yeah, loads of pigs. And one of them is a polymorphed halfling.
Yeah, called Drevin. Drevin,
who can speak. But the thing is...
He can't speak in the adventure. That was, you
that
know,
was your twist.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is that the other characters instantly wanted to trust him. In a dungeon that, I might add, has not earned our trust at all. Not once has it earned our trust. Nothing is as it seems. And Marcus is just there like, am I the insane one? Which I feel like was the same with Orlo. So I think this might be a Ben thing. To be like, why are we trusting this random talking pig?
He's like micro pig as well.
Yeah, they've instantly fallen in love with him. I'm gonna kill him in his sleep, I think.
I mean, you know, your guys, what got to be the most was your guys' ability to find every single pig gif, like, imaginable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, whilst in this swine pen, within like 5 minutes, there's already like 15 different memes about pigs.
On our Discord server, we have a general chat, we have a handout chat, and we have an initiative trap for each game. And in the general, it's where you kind of put all the memes and things. And usually we're quite good, we're quite focused, we don't
not
do that
games.
Kind of thing. No, especially not in that game, it was 2 nights ago now. I think it was the...
It was the 10-hour pig noises that really sort of started to get to me at one point.
So I think for me, it was that we were all a little bit hyper to be playing again, because it's been that we've had some on and offness recently.
Yeah.
But then I am, of course, resident DJ, so I control Kenku and play the music. And on Kenku, not only can you have Spotify open for your, you know, ambience and your music and stuff, you can also open up YouTube. And I found, not only did I find a 10-hour loop of pig sound effects, but it was a 10-hour loop that was meant to be calming and relaxing to listen to.
And it
was not that.
And it had pig facts.
Oh, it had pig facts, yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it did have pig facts, yeah. We should talk about Marcus at some point, because he's quite an interesting character. And one I am, between you and me, James, determined to get killed. I think with Orlo, I was so focused on not dying.
Yeah.
That with Marcus, I've gone completely the other way. I'm like, die. I need you to die.
Well, we'll see what
preferably.
Happens.
Preferably by pig.
Yeah, did get a little bit close in the old pig pen.
No, Marcus is okay. He's doing all right.
Oh, yeah. He got awfully close to Ivan.
Ivan was having a rough time. A lot of paralyzing stuff going on there.
Yeah.
What about my game? We've picked that back up now. There was a lot of... I had one of those check-ins with the players, with all of you individually and together, because there was a bit of a vibe of like, no one's really feeling this. What's going on? But last session, Dave unfortunately didn't make it, but wanted us to play on, so we did. And Wesley afterwards said, like, that felt like a traditional, like, D&D session, and I feel like that's what we need right now. And I completely agree with him, because we've done a lot of dungeoneering, and, you know, the world has changed, and there's a lot of heaviness going on. So you guys have made your way to Jakar Anchorage. Now, bear in mind, this is... You've time jumped 5 years, because you've been dead for 5 years and been brought back to life. So everything's a little bit different, but the pirates are there, and there's a scene between the three pirate lords.
Yeah, that was good.
I have wanted to run that scene, that set piece, since the very beginning of Tomb of Annihilation.
Yeah.
So in the beginning of Tomb, there's three pirates, and they're three ships, and they're kind of dealing, they're causing chaos around Chult. And it's a side quest. And it's like, if you bring in a pirate ship, you get 20 gold pieces per ship that you bring in. And it's a way...
Well, a few more than 20.
20,000 per ship.
Yeah. You said 20. You just said 20.
Sorry, I meant 20,000. Yeah, 20,000 per ship. Okay, thanks for that giant sailing boat. Here's 20 gold.
Yeah, I'd be like, that was not fucking worth it.
No. But the thing is, it's given to you in Port Naranzai when you first arrive, but Jakar Anchorage is on the other side of the peninsula. So unless you specifically go, okay, let's go do that, let's go sailing and find them, you're not going to do that quest really until the end of the campaign, or at least until you're close to finding Omu. So I... And one of the players we had at the beginning of the campaign was a pirate and was linked to them, which obviously is a dead plot hook now. But I really wanted to play these pirate lords and this scene between the three of them, like you arriving and witnessing a meeting. And then you got there and 5 years has gone on. One of the other pirates has recently taken over and like caused a mutiny, and he wants to be pirate king and change the way things are done. And the other two don't want that. And they see him as young and naive. But I was like, how am I gonna have them see this scene? So I was planning for you guys to like sneak up, overhear some talking about how all three pirate lords are together for once and it never happens. And then maybe like you sneak in and you see them leave or something. Instead, Wesley did the brilliant thing of using his arcane eye, which meant I could just RP the entire scene to you guys.
So just to be clear, we use arcane eye. And then swapped over to scrying. So, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Stayed in the bounds of the spells.
Yeah, so you could hear things. And it was just great. James is just disconnected. James is back from his disconnecting.
There we go. I don't know what happened. The Discord just died and then came back to life again.
Oh, very interesting. But yeah, it was such a good scene to run. Like, I felt... good, like there I am jumping between three characters, doing my voices, and you guys are getting to experience. Like, it's one of those ones where you get to watch and I get to flex my muscles a little bit after I've seen you guys role play for 3 hours.
The start of that session was very everyone trying to fix Braylar, and Braylar being like, nah, I'm depressed, mate.
Yeah, I don't need fixing, I'm just sad. So we're playing the next session of that on Tuesday, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it's Monday today. And if you're new to the podcast, what I do is I give each episode, each session a title. Very excited about today's one. Because, so I send out my little doors open, curtains, and end time for the session, and then the session title. So in the past, actually, let's see what we have. We've had some good ones in the past, haven't we?
Yeah.
The recent ones have been a little bit jokey because it's kind of where we're at, but we've had, so the last one was Here There Be Pirates Somewhere, because you didn't quite know where the anchorage was, and you were searching for them. Before that it was Sisters Before Misters, because you'd upset a coven and we were starting on a combat with them. Before that we had, that was the session got rescheduled three times, Welcome to the Company, because you guys started an adventuring company. Before that, it was Saving People Hunting Things, which is a supernatural reference.
Yeah.
Because it's your job now. The World Above, which is when you finally left the tomb after all that time. Anyway, so tomorrow's episode is The Day the Anchorage Fell, Part 1, which I love because I feel like the Part 1 just makes it feel so much more epic.
So there's some about the anchorage as well. I can't remember. Oh, it's a Fallout thing.
Is it?
Because you've got the Battle of Anchorage in Fallout, which is like the battle between America and China over Alaska.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
It's where like the power armor's first used. I think the T-51's first used, something like that.
Your Fallout lore is so much better than mine. So I'll take your word for it. I probably got that
50% wrong, but yeah.
So I'm very excited to play that tomorrow. That'd be a lot of fun. Yeah. I think you guys plan to just absolutely ransack the place, don't you?
I don't know. Like, we're in a few minds. I don't know about the fire yet.
I don't think you should burn the place down. It looks like it would be a pretty good base if you ever needed one. I don't know.
It's true, but I'm like, we need to sneak in. And fire's a really good form of like chaos distraction.
Yeah, but you could take all three ships and have a fleet at your disposal.
Yeah, but like, bear in mind as well, just because we burn some of it down doesn't mean we burn all of it. So we can just burn the tavern down, burn like the upside down ship.
Famously, that's how fires work. They're so controlled and they don't burn everything.
The other boats are in like the ocean. It'll be fine.
God, it's going to be chaotic and I'm very excited for it. But during our session, we talked about what actually we're going to talk about today, which is true names, because it came up when communicating with, was it a devil or a demon we were talking to? It was a fiend of some sort,
it was what had happened is you guys in Dead and Fae, in the Doom Vault, you came across a box which was being kept by Taralvara the Lich. And yes, in that box, it was literally just a bunch of lists of true names.
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah. And obviously, so, we were a bit like, we all kind of know how they work, but how do they work?
Yeah. They're a thing. They exist in mythology and thus in pretty much any fantasy setting and TTRPG. I mean, look at things like The Name of the Wind is pretty much all about true names. Devils and demons are often depicted as having true names, and if you know their names, you have power and control over them. In demonology and different forms of magic, they talk about true names. So it's this kind of thing that's existed. And actually, when you Google true name, you go to like the Wikipedia true name, it's defined as the name of a thing or being that expresses or is somehow identical to its true nature. The notion that language or some specific sacred language refers to things by their true names has been central to philosophical study, as well as various traditions of magic, religious signification, and mysticism and mantras since antiquity. So it's this proper thing, this proper age-old thing.
Yeah.
And it gets mentioned here and there, especially in things like D&D.
Usually like summoning spells.
Yeah, and there's no set rules for it. So the best example I have, actually, if I grab the book, is I guess slight spoilers for Tomb of Annihilation. One of the last creatures you meet is a rather amenable Eukoloth. Is it Eukoloth? Is that what it is?
Mr. Yeah. Fox? I think we actually found out his name as well. We were told it.
Yeah, through your adventuring.
We ended up, we never at any point used it.
No, he's quite, he's a good egg, that one. But it says in the book here we go. If any character speaks he's an Arcanoloth. If any character speaks the Arcanoloth's true name, Yaga Razig, which is, you find in Area 71, within earshot of the fiend, it's stunned for 1 minute. Once the stunned effect wears off, repeating the Arcanoloth's name has no effect on it for the next 24 hours. If killed, the Arcanoloth melts into a pool of ichor, leaving behind its robes and horn-rimmed spectacles. See treasure below. So it has an effect. And don't get me wrong, that's a powerful effect in a combat. Stunned for 1 minute with no ability to come out of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're fighting a demon and you say it's true name and it's stunned for 10 rounds, like that's pretty impactful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's combat over.
Even if it was like fucking Orcus, you know, if you stun it for a minute, like.
And there's no saving throw.
No.
So they are powerful, but it doesn't really feed into the lore of like knowing the true name gives you power over a creature, which is kind of where true names come from.
Yeah.
So let's talk about them and how, when, and why we would use them.
Yeah.
I personally really love the idea of true names. Like, I love the lore in it. And I think this is going to be a running theme. Like, the lore of a wizard trying to find the true name so he can summon a demon and have it under his control. Like, I find that so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've also really loved the idea of true names since one of the first fantasy books I ever read was Eragon.
Mm.
And in that, it's got the ancient language. And in the ancient language, everything has its true name.
Mm.
Even the language itself has a name. The idea being nobody knows it, but eventually you find it out, and then you can basically do whatever. But everything has its true name, and if you know the thing's true name, you can have true mastery over it. Even if it's a person, whether it's like water, rock, mountains, all that kind of stuff, it all has its true name. And just that idea of if you truly understand the essence of something, being able to control it is really cool.
Yeah, and I think it's a power fantasy thing, as a lot of like TTRPG like wizard characters are. But it's one of those things that feels like you couldn't put a mechanic to it. Like, it feels like it would be too powerful. Like, a wish is a very powerful thing, and we know that wishes as the scope gets grander, the expectation of it going wrong is much higher.
Yeah.
But with a true name, like I struggle to see how you could make that a thing, because you don't want to play just to be like, oh cool, I found the true name of a beholder and now it does exactly what I wanted to forever. That's too much. So how do you put a mechanic to a feature like that? Like, for a second, ignore like, how do you find the true name? That's, you know, that's a quest line. How do you work out what the true name is? Yeah, it's up to you. You're a DM. Anyone can have a name of whatever, you know, any kind of strange syllables you want to put together. But how do you put the mechanical element on? What is it? What does that look like?
I mean,
that's what I struggle with.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best place to look is to start with, like, you know, the summon spells.
Mm.
Because, well, I'm pretty sure these are the ones that actually, like, have the idea of true names in them. Where, like, if you know the name of the demon or devil, you can summon that specific one.
Yeah.
You know, but even then, like, you know, looking at the spell, which I've just managed to pull up, the demon has disadvantage on this saving throw if you say its true name.
Which is still passable, and especially if it's a big, powerful demon, it's probably still going to pass.
Yeah. But then, like, you know, I don't think that really fulfills what they're meant to be, because why would you go to the effort of finding your true name, if all it does is make you slightly more likely to actually control them?
I think... like, I really love the stunned thing. I think the idea that saying its name puts a creature into a stasis of not being able to act in its own free will. I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel like the only thing it should have. But then I'm afraid to make the power of a true name too strong.
I feel like a cool thing you could do, because finding out true names isn't an easy thing by any means.
No,
You can't just, you know, stumble across them. Usually,
yeah, you're not gonna, even if if your life's goal is to find out Orcus's true name, you're probably never gonna achieve that.
No. What I think could be really cool is, so obviously when you say it stuns them for that minute, and then there could even be a spell to go along with that, which then allows you to bind that creature, in servitude to you, or to make them do something.
Oh, we've lost him again.
Oh, it's frozen again. Oh, there
he's
we go.
Back. He's there we back. Go.
Severe technical difficulties today. I don't know at what point I cut out on your end.
You said the stunning things work, but maybe something like you can use it to bind them.
Yeah, so you can use it to bind them, to make them complete a specific task, to give you something, to, you know, something along those lines. Because it's going to have to be something quite specific. Because you don't want to leave it too general, because that will just be completely broken. And everyone will just go, well, I'm never giving my player a true name because that's broken.
Yeah, I like the idea that if you're going to work with a demon, and we're really focusing on the fiend side of things here, but I guess you could take this and use it for anything, any creature.
It's one of those that's going to depend on your world, because in some worlds, everything has true names that you can use to control them. In others, it is your devils and demons and fae.
And your angels as well, which is quite an interesting duality. Yeah. So I like the idea that if you're going to be working with a specific demon, because let's face it, like, a lot of people don't dabble in demonology. If they're working on with demons and devils, they're probably working with specific ones, or they're thinking of going against a specific one.
Yeah.
The idea of going out and hunting down and finding the true name so that they have to be summoned, I like that. I think if you use a true name in a summoning spell, they arrive. It's them
that you have to. Yeah.
Regardless. No saving throw. I like the idea that, okay, well, if I've got the true name of, let's use Orcus as an example. If I'm going to use the true name to summon Orcus, my protections have to be strong, you know, or he's just going to turn up and go, why have you called me here, and instantly kill me? Which is where demonologists tend to go wrong, I find, in
that
stories.
That is the usual thing. There's a gap in the circle, rune drawn slightly wrong, and then
exactly
you get obliterated.
The stunned thing I like, maybe that's part of the binding.
I think the strength thing is quite important. Like, if you know the true name of an imp, like, you can make that imp do whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, say you did know the true name of Orcus.
Mm.
You're going to have to be really specific with what you ask him to do when you, say, use his true name to command him, because he will look for a way around that to fuck you over.
Yeah. Or maybe, like, because he's more powerful, he has a better chance of withstanding his true name, or like, yeah, or being able to like, there's a great, one of the Dritz books, one of the early ones within the first seven, because that's all I've read. There's a demon that's working for one of the guys.
It's going to be Ertu. Because yeah, if I remember rightly, Dritz basically shouts his true name to distract him. And then he gets like fucked over by something.
But there's also some of the wizards that are trying to get Krishenabon. They, one of them has a devil or a demon working for him, and he sends him out and makes him do his bidding. And every time you see those interactions in the book, and it gives you the fiend's point of view, it's him like thinking about the fact that he's biding his time and he's waiting for the mage to make a mistake, because once he makes a mistake, he'll absolutely destroy him.
Yeah.
And eventually it does bite. He does make a mistake and it bites him in the ass. I like that. I like the idea that the devil or the demon or the fiend or whatever, or the angel, is aware and conscious and is frustrated that you know this piece of information and so has to do your bidding, but they know that you're a mere mortal. At some point you're going to slip up, and then they'll be able to absolutely make you pay for it.
Yeah.
I've just flipped open. I've had a sprinkle in my mind of something. There's a book in the Witcher TTRPG that's all about magic called A Tome of Chaos, and they have a whole section on Goetia, which is demon summoning, and they talk about binding spells, and obviously it's a very different system to Pathfinder or D&D, but it's very much dealing with the things that we're talking about today. For example, I've just pulled up this section here. Once you've successfully summoned a demon, things get a bit more complicated. The demon you've summoned is under no obligation to remain, but will always be interested in making a deal with you. Each demon has a specific deal that it likes to make and will begin by offering it to you. Demons are largely single-minded creatures and will not accept other offers unless they are along the same lines of their favorite deal. If both you and the demon accept the deal proposed, you can stand to benefit, see the benefits of Goetia table. However, similarly to a genie, a demon will always twist the words of any deal, blah, 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 as we know. Demons don't accept deals that are not beneficial to them, blah, 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 blah. This is a highly, here you go. So demons will not accept deals that are not beneficial to them unless they are bound using the ritual of binding, which few goetic practitioners are ever able to learn. This is a highly complex, tremendously dangerous process that requires the practitioner to assemble a magical artifact known as the Staff of Binding. When combined with a ritual of binding, the staff allows the wielder to trap a demon with a magical barrier and force them into subservience. Successfully completing this ritual places that practitioner in a tenuous relationship with the demon, where they can call upon the demon's power without having to give anything up. Any bound demon will be constantly looking to escape this relationship and exact revenge on the person who bound them. Should the demon ever get loose, your best bet is to find a witcher. And this is like the dynamic that I love. And in The Witcher, in the RPG, all of the spells, all of the magic, they're very, very costly. Not only in the sense that they require you to make a staff, find the ingredients, all that stuff, which is hard to do in the game, but they also take hours of actual gameplay to get to a point where you can find the spell, where you can be the level, where you can get all the stuff together, where you can find time to do the spell and have it work. It might not work. And that's the draw to The Witcher as a TTRPG system. It's very gritty.
Yeah.
But I love that for like true names and demons and things.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that if you're summoning a demon, especially if you're using its true name, it's going to be frustrated. And so you should probably bind it. And if you're doing this, you know that it's
risky.
It's risky. But the second part I wanted to bring up is in this book, they have a ritual of naming.
Yeah.
So this is a spell in The Witcher, which doesn't cost you any stamina, which all spells run off of. There's actually a little like flavorful thing, like put little texts like they do in the D&D books. It says, I have it, the name is key. It holds power as our ancestors before us believed. I can summon it, Yaya an Is, that's their elven. I can summon it and make things right again. Anyway, the spell says, I'll read you the process and then I'll read you the effects. And obviously this is a different system, so we'll have to kind of talk around how it works, but create a bonfire of beast bones, coal, and dry wood. This fire must be hot enough to burn bright orange. Rub a mixture of coal, fifth essence, and your own blood onto the exposed skin and protect it. While holding a branch of hazel, submerge the treated skin into the fire. The fire will be harmless to you and should burn white hot for a while before going out. While the fire burns hot, think of a demon whose true name you wish to discover. When the fire expires, remove your skin from the fire, a true name of the demon should appear in the crust of the coal coating your skin. Effect. This ritual allows a player to learn the true name of a specific demon. Once removed from the fire, the name can be safely recovered, recorded to save for later. If you fail the ritual in its crafting check, then upon removing your skin from the fire, you find the coal had burned off during the ritual and the name of the demon has been burned into your skin, marking you with a lucifage or lucifuge. I don't know how to say that word. You may have discovered the true name of the demon, but it will forever know where you are while you bear this mark and may appear to you on its own terms as it wishes. You have to make a DC check of 18, 24 for greater demons, and it requires a shit ton of components and an investment of 848 gold pieces. But then they have a table for true names, so you can just combine syllables to make names.
Yeah.
For example, James, pick a number between 1 and 6.
5.
Okay, now pick a number between 1 and 10.
2.
Okay, so our guy's name is 5 and 2. The first syllable is Sha. So then you roll again and you give me another one. So you might say 6 and 4, which would be Ma. So his name is Sharma. So you can do that with as many syllables as you want.
Yeah.
But then you've got the ritual of binding. And for the ritual of binding, you can use the true name.
Yeah.
So it gives you the ability to bind them. So there's mechanical benefits to it, and I kind of like it. It feels a bit more, do you know what it feels like? It feels like it would fuel satanic panic. And that's what I want.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my monthly foray into everyone should play The Witcher.
We do need to get back to that, don't we?
When we finished Tomb of Annihilation, air quotes simulation because the campaign's finished. When we move on from this campaign, I'm running Witcher for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's happening. Even if it's just for a month and we play 4 sessions and it's a mini campaign, I don't care. I'm running it. Anyway, I have actually learned some true names in my time.
Yeah.
I know you've been wondering for a while how I managed to do it. How I managed to convince the Dice Dungeon and Describe to not only sponsor this podcast, but do it indefinitely. And it's through true naming.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right, because why else?
I cast the coal onto my skin, I placed it into the fire, and upon my paley visage, their true identities were revealed to me. And so in this ritualistic binding, I do have to tell you that if you want to get yourself some really beautiful dice, you can head over to the Dice Dungeon. Whether you want them made out of glass, resin, metal, whatever. Maybe you want to buy a small little bag that you can open and it's a mystery. You don't know what set you're going to get. Maybe you're looking for dice rolling trays or scrolls or bags or something to keep all of your player gear or DM gear together in one place when you move from table to table. The Dice Dungeon, honestly, it has it all. There's a link in the description below. You can head over to that, fill your basket with all the goodies that you might possibly want to need, and then put the code WESPEAKCOMMON in the checkout, and you'll get 10% off everything you order. And actually, funny side story that's not to do with the ad read. Someone I know recently asked me for advice on a set of dice because their sister or their friend was buying some. And they messaged me and said, oh, here's the ones that they like. And I'd messaged them just before saying, I know a great website and I can get you 10% off. And they sent me the link to this website before reading the message, and it was the Dice Dungeon.
Well, hey.
And I asked if they were a listener of the podcast, and they're not. So that's fun. But there you go. The Dice Dungeon is out there, and even non-We Speak Common members are using it. So it must be good. Because as we know, we all here, we lack a few brain cells. I'm speaking solely for me and James. Of course, the other demon that I have bound to me is Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. That's not their true name. Don't go trying to use it. But Describe has thousands and thousands of scenes written by professional creative writers to help spice up your games. If you want to really paint the image of the world in your players' heads, maybe you want to perfectly describe the moment that the life leaves the poor orphan child and really, really scar them at the table. They've got that. Maybe you want to perfectly describe what it looks like when your demon is summoned and is very, very angry and stabs you with its 9-inch nail that it has on its hand. They've probably got that too. Honestly, there's over, I think, 12,000 scenes now, probably even more. It goes up every bloody week. I can't keep up with it. They've got them for DMs. They've got them for players too. If you're looking to spice up your combat and describe how you, you know, kill things and slice things and bring your player, bring your friends' player characters back to life from the brink of existence. Or if you're looking for soundtracks, maps, all that kind of stuff to make the game just that much better, that much sweeter, they've got all that too. You can head over to Describe. There's 500-ish scenes that you can get for free just by being on the website, and then if you log in and you subscribe to Describe, you'll get access to everything, and you can get 10% off your subscription for every month that it's active up to the first 2 years using the code COMMON at checkout. So go and check them out. Again, links all in the description below, along with our Patreon and our Discord server and all that stuff if you want to get involved that way too. Okay, so you've got the true name.
Yep.
You've decided to summon the entity.
Yeah.
You're going to bind it.
Mm-hmm.
You're using the tree name to do all of that. That's all well and good. Now you've got a demon or a devil, let's say demon in this instance, or an angel, whatever, bound to you, and you know its tree name. Is the tree name done with, or can you keep using it?
You've got to be able to keep using it, surely.
Okay, but what for, James? No.
But
can I summon like this demon into battle like a Pikachu?
That might be a bit far.
No, exactly. This is why we're having this conversation.
Dependent on the power level of the demon. You know, if it's
you're telling me I can't pull Orcus into fight for me?
Not whenever you want, no. Because I imagine there would be probably cosmic forces that would not enjoy that.
Oh no, I'm being stood up by bandits on the road. Orcus, I choose you. Hit them with your wand mace.
No, I like this idea that once you've bound them to you, you don't necessarily have to use the name. Mm. You can always try and form like a relationship with the entity and kind of work together. But then obviously there'll be points where they just flat out refuse and you go, right then, fucker.
Yeah.
Shamar.
Shamar. And you always know that in their mind they're thinking, like, yes, yes, I am your friend. I can't wait to stab you in the back.
Yeah. Which is why especially powerful demons might just send fucking kill squads after you.
Yeah, like if it gets out that you're looking for the true name of a specific fiend and they find out and they've got a bit of power, a bit of leverage in the demon underworld, they're going to send creatures after you.
Yeah. Or even if once you've got it, because there's...
If you've got it and you've not used it.
Yeah. Or if like in your binding, you don't make clear that someone else can't cause you harm by their directive or something.
Yeah, like their lieutenant comes to get you.
That'd be a really cool screw you.
That would be good.
But I feel like maybe being able to summon them for a certain period of time in some degree would be good. You might not necessarily be able to summon them at full power. You know, you're dragging them out of wherever they're from. Might depend on what spell level you use or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea that you're always playing with fire.
Yeah.
You know, you never quite know if you're doing the right thing. Like, you should always feel risky. You should always feel dangerous to be playing around with creatures like this. Maybe you you know, you've got them bound so you can call them to you at any point with a simple summoning spell, but you're doing it for information. So you're constantly bugging this demon by just being like, cool, okay, Shamar, come to me and tell me these secrets of the universe that I need. Help me find this person. And they're like, for God's sake, yeah, okay, fine. He's in the tavern. He's always in the tavern. He's the local drunk. Go piss off. Like, that, I think, is like an interesting, funny relationship to have with a higher entity.
Yeah.
Who wants you dead because he's just annoyed with you for calling on him constantly. Like, he's your personal Google.
Yeah. I feel like another cool thing could be if their true name changes.
But is it a true name if it changes? Is it true?
Yeah, but that depends on how it ends up being changed. Like, say you've got an angel bound to you, mm-hmm. and, you know, the angel's whole thing is, like, I don't know, retribution or something like that. But yeah. then, you know, that is at the very core of that angel's personality. But then something happens which, you know, causes the angel to fall.
And so it's no longer angelic.
Not even necessarily no longer angelic, but just something about them fundamentally changes on, like, a soul level that could possibly change their true name, freeing them from the bounds that you've bound them into.
That's a very cool dynamic. That's a campaign hook, because you can have adventurers, you have been hired because I once had this creature under control and I no longer do.
Yeah, it's something that would, like, happen only very rarely in very specific circumstances, because, you know, changing the very essence of one's being is not a simple task. But that could be cool. Their essence changes, now they're free.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Okay, let's talk about using true names in combat then. So maybe your campaign is that you're hunting down this very powerful creature and you research and find its true name to use against it. We've talked about the stunning effect, and I think it's a very cool effect, but if it's just wham, bam, stunned, and that's it, there's no save, they're stunned for a minute, that's quite debilitating to a DM in a, like, big climactic battle at the end of the campaign. So how do we give the true name the feeling of power, but also not be too strong that it just kind of ruins the last fight?
Well, if you don't like the stunning thing, because the stunning thing is very, very strong, you could use it and it could strip away a portion of their power and protections. So, like, say you're fighting something and use its true name, boom, its legendary resistances, gone.
Gone.
It's saves reduced by 3 or something like that. And you could even another cool thing you could do is you could do a campaign where they're trying to find out a creature's true name, but it's a long one and it's in several parts. And
so you find bits of it.
Find bits of it, and they could even fight this creature on the way each time. And maybe realize as they get more and more of the name, it weakens them further and further. So
I like that. I like that. I also like the idea that you could take the narrative approach of it, of, okay, so you're gonna fight this demon. You need to go to its plane of existence, because, as we know, if you kill them on the material plane, it doesn't actually kill them.
Yeah.
And you're not only gonna kill it, but you're gonna bind it away. You're gonna seal it away for all eternity. But to do that, you need to do this ritual, and in the ritual, you need to use the name. And so in the combat, you have to get it down to maybe mechanically it's a certain number of hit points, or you need to get rid of all of its legendary resistances,
yeah.
or burn its resources so that it can't stop you, and then use your actions to cast the ritual during the combat. That would be very cool, sealing something away like that.
Yeah.
And the key is to use its true name. So the true name doesn't have a mechanical effect in the combat per se, or maybe it can. You could add in one of those lesser effects of it gets rid of the legendary resistances or something, but on a narrative level, it's this very powerful moment of invoking this creature's true name, and that's what seals it away forever.
I think as well, because it is this powerful thing that isn't mechanically solid, you can have it do what you need it to do for that for that plot line or that particular quest or something.
It can change.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, maybe going after the Yukolov or Arcanolov, yeah, it stuns them for a minute, but going after something else, maybe it could just completely obliterate them.
Or maybe the true name is the key, and it depends what lock you're putting it into, what effect you get. So in this ritual, it binds them, but just you shouting out and about just gives you a stun or whatever. Yeah. Because I feel like something this powerful would have a multifaceted use.
I mean, it'd also be fun to have a whole quest where you find it out so you can release them.
You accidentally whisper the name and you pull this infinite being that has been trapped away for millennia.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be cool. That would be very, very cool. Oh, you've accidentally unleashed the world-ending boss. Now go fix your mess and reseal it.
Yeah.
That's Pandora's box there, though, isn't it? That's that storyline.
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm into that. I'm very into that. It fuels a lot of my imagination, this topic.
Yeah. I mean, Wizards did try putting it into the game. Because I think I mentioned this when we talked about the topic. I was like, I'm sure there was like a subclass somewhere. It was from like 2019 from an Unearthed Arcana. It was in with like the Twilight Cleric and stuff. But it ended up being binned because it just didn't feel great. I think it didn't feel strong enough, or some bits of it were too strong. It was just a bit all over the place, and so it didn't get used.
It's so hard to balance this thing. It's so hard to make this thing work on a gameplay level. And we've seen that in Wizards and in our conversation today. And I think that's why going narrative with it is probably the best way to make it feel the way you want it to feel.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, some things aren't meant to be player classes.
Yeah.
Because it makes them normal, normalizes them, trivializes them in a way. Okay, parting advice on true naming beings.
Have a look around at where else it's been used. And think, well, what do I like about it? How do I think it should be used in my world? You know, should it give you mastery over the thing you've got the name of? Should it give you power over them to an extent? You know, think very carefully about what you want its purpose to be. Because I think that's the thing with true names. They're meant to have a purpose. And so you need that purpose to make them impactful.
Yeah. For me, it would be work out what you want it to do for you in the narrative first, and think about that big use before you start thinking about giving out true names that have little abilities that can be used all the time. Because I think you'll end up in a world where players are obsessed with finding the true names of everything because they give them power. And it's not really what you want, because I think true names should remain this epic, powerful thing that you don't necessarily just get and find and use willy-nilly.
Yeah. I mean, in the whole of Faerun, there is one entity that knows them all.
Who is it?
I don't think they necessarily has a name. I think they're literally called like the Knower of Names.
I don't know about that creature.
I think they're only mentioned in like one source thing somewhere.
And it's probably been scrubbed from all
probably, now. Yeah. But I think you had to pay a certain cost to get the true name from them. And that cost...
What, like they were a true name merchant?
Effectively, yeah. You can go to them and ask for a true name and they go, yeah, I'll give it you if you pay enough.
And the payment's never going to be gold.
It might be, depending on what it is. It could just be a stupid amount of gold because they don't want to give it to you. But I think the whole thing is they say the prices are set by the gods.
The prices are set by the gods. And who are the gods? Oh, we are. We are the gods.
Yeah.
Okay, James. Well, thank you. I found this conversation very stimulating.
Yeah. I feel like we've come up with like 15 different plot hooks and quests. Yeah,
It's one of those ones that's never going to have an answer. We love those topics here on the show. But it's good to think about and talk about because it gets your brain going. If you've got any ideas, or if you have, in fact, once summoned a demon by using its true name and want to give us your advice, other than don't do it, ruin my life, then come over to the Discord server and tell us. There's a link in the description below. It's the best place to go to keep up to date with what's going on We Speak Common. In fact, when we missed the episode last week, they were the guys to know. We announced on Discord just so everyone knew what was going on. So if you thought, oh, I'm sure I've missed an episode, join the Discord. That's how you know. If you want to keep up to date, do it over there. And of course, there's a Patreon too if you want to directly support us. As always, I have been Benjamin Norris. You have been James Williams. And those are not our true names, so don't invoke us.
No, don't.
No, seriously.
And we'll know if you try.
Put the chalk down. All right, thanks, James. See you later.
See you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler 82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.